least a tiny little bit of moral integrity. They lost every moral integrity, at least in the global South, with their unconditional support for the, in parts, very extreme right wing government of Benjamin Netanyahu. And even in Europe, for example, we do have support for recognition of the Palestinian state by three member states like Ireland, Spain, and Norway, because they want to stop
and
this
Sweden's
unconditional
already
support.
Done it.
Yeah, and they want to stop this unconditional support. So you have rising contradictions and crisis within the European Union and the NATO states, according to this unconditional support. And in Germany, it's rising because, as you said, we are the second biggest supplier of weapons. We've been, actually, and we've been lawsuited before the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Nicaragua did an indictment against
we
the weapon deliveries.
Seconds.
And pardon?
We have 5 seconds.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing is that we as Germany have to go our own sovereign, independent foreign policy. And
we have
not
to leave it there. Seven Dagelin is a German parliament member joining us from Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO for our annual live broadcast of the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, broadcasting from Friday, July 19th through Sunday, July 21st. This year's festival features Johnny Wheels and the Swamp Donkeys, Jujuba, and Tyrone Hendrix and the PDX Soul Collective. Again, that's KBOO's broadcast of Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, live from St. John's. The broadcast starts at 4:30 p.m. on Friday and at 1 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. More information can be found at kboo.fm/cathedralpark24.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Engineering Committee meeting will be held on July 11th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members and the Oregon Country Fair, July 12th through 14th in Vineta. Fairgoers experience a celebration of art, music, and family on 17 stages in a wooded setting. No tickets will be sold on-site. Tickets and information at oregoncountryfair.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the July 4th heat wave kills 9 Oregonians.
TriMet wins a grant to buy fuel cell electric buses.
And in national news, a Montana court heard arguments today in a landmark youth climate suit.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 10th, 2024. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Reed Johnson. 9 Oregonians have died due to the heat-related causes since the heat wave began last week. 6 of those deaths were in Multnomah County. The other 3 deaths occurred in Washington, Coos, and Jackson counties. 7 of the people who died were over 63 years old, while the other 2 were both 33-year-old men. The identities of all victims have yet to be released. The state medical examiner's office said, quote, further tests and investigation will determine whether the deaths are officially hot weather related. In some cases, the deaths may be found to have had other causes, end quote. In Phoenix, Arizona, 175 people are suspected to have died due to heat since the beginning of the calendar year.
There are three active wildfires in Oregon, Larch Creek, Upper Pine, and Salt Creek. With more, it's KBOO's Grant Button.
As of this morning, a Level 3 Go Now evacuation order has been put in place in parts of Wasco County. This is in response to the Lark Creek Fire, which is 16 miles south of the Dalles and has grown to 7,000 acres. The perimeter is 0% contained. The Red Cross has opened an evacuation shelter at Maupin High School. Officials stated that the Wasco County Fairgrounds is a temporary location for evacuated livestock. The fire started yesterday around 2 p.m. when temperatures soared to 107 degrees. The cause of the fire is currently under investigation. Chief Deputy State Fire Marshal Travis Medema explained the high level of difficulty in containing these fires. He said, quote, "The continued hot, dry conditions and gusty winds are a dangerous combination. I am asking everyone to do what they can to prevent sparking a wildfire," end quote. In addition to the Lark Creek Fire, firefighters are also battling the Salt Creek Fire in southern Oregon. As of yesterday, the fire has spread to 3,300 acres and is 2% contained. In response to these fires, Governor Tina Kotek invoked the Emergency Conflagration Act for the fire on Tuesday. This allows a state fire marshal to mobilize state resources to protect life and property. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
The U.S. Department of Transportation has awarded TriMet a $39 million grant to buy fuel cell electric buses. TriMet plans to use their new zero-emission buses to serve riders on 82nd Avenue. The former state highway spans one of the most culturally and ethnically diverse areas of Portland. It also remains one of the deadliest roads in the Portland metro area. Outgoing Congressman Earl Blumenauer wrote in a press release following the administration of the funds, quote, "Last year, Secretary Buttigieg saw firsthand the case for investment on 82nd Avenue. Today, the Biden-Harris administration delivered. The community has united behind a shared vision, transforming a once-neglected area into a thriving corridor in a low-carbon, equitable fashion. This funding will make that a reality," end quote. In 2022, the Portland Bureau of Transportation, or PBOT, took ownership of 82nd Avenue from ODOT and has since committed $182 million to improvements. The federal funds add to $25 million already directed to build an electric bus facility on Columbia Boulevard. This was announced on July 1st. TriMet currently operates 10 battery-powered electric buses. In 2018, the transit service announced they are pursuing a completely zero-emission bus fleet by 2040. TriMet says they plan to use the most recent funds to begin a second high-capacity line. The line along 82nd will complement the first, which travels between Gresham and Inner Portland along Division Street.
The Montana Supreme Court heard oral arguments today for the youth-led climate case Held versus the State of Montana. The lawyers for the 16 plaintiffs presented oral arguments before a packed courtroom, presenting their case in an effort to uphold an August 2023 ruling. The ruling stated that the state of Montana's law that require the state to not listen to young people's climate injuries while promoting fossil fuel use violates the constitutional rights to a clean and healthful environment for the youth. After the historic ruling, the state appealed the decision to the Montana Supreme Court. Roger Sullivan of McGarvey Law is the attorney for the plaintiffs in the case. He argued that the 16 young Montanans have personally suffered direct and severe impacts from climate change, and that their constitutional rights have been violated by the Montana fossil fuel law. Ricky Held, a plaintiff in the case, expressed why this ruling is so critical to uphold. He said, quote, "With this case, we are working to protect our state of Montana, our people, and our land, because this is our home. It is our responsibility and moral obligation, along with that of the courts, to hold our government systems accountable in ensuring our most fundamental rights are protected," end quote. The Montana Supreme Court has the opportunity during oral arguments to listen to attorneys from both sides and review the trial court record as they weigh their decision.
Dozens of landfills across California are now generating power, converting the methane gas emitted by decomposing food waste into energy. The Puente Hills landfill in LA closed in 2013, but is now the largest landfill gas-to-energy system in the country, producing enough energy to power about 70,000 homes. Mike Backus is with Ameresco, a company that designs, builds, and operates renewable energy plants for landfills.
We either use it or lose it. Why wouldn't we use every drop and displace fossil fuels? So for every molecule of biogenic methane we use, one drop of natural gas stays in the ground.
The EPA's landfill methane outreach program has spurred a lot of activity in the biogas sector, and the Inflation Reduction Act provided tax deductions for landfills to install these systems. But Backus says more small landfills would put them in if the feds would allow investment tax credits to be used for financing. He says the feds should also permit landfill owners to benefit, even if they don't own both the collection system and the energy processing plant. Daniel Brissett with the Environmental and Energy Study Institute says pipelines are expensive, so proximity to a customer who will buy the natural gas or electricity is key.
The operators, they would probably look at how much can we produce and then how close are we to where it can be used.
Studies show that food waste contributes more than half of fugitive methane emissions from municipal solid waste landfills. And landfills are the third largest human-generated sources of methane, which contributes to climate change.
Washington State distributed nearly $1.5 million in grants to support small and mid-sized food businesses. As Eric Tegethoff reports, the grants fund farmers, food, and meat processors and distributors.
Washington State has allocated nearly $1.5 million in grants to support local food systems and supply chains. The Washington State Department of Agriculture distributed the funds to 40 projects, supporting farmers, food and meat processors, and distributors. Galen Van Horn with the agency directed distribution of the funds and says there's been consolidation in the large-scale market that small and mid-sized operations can combat.
We've just seen a clear need for investment to support those small and mid-sized operations and make sure that infrastructure is scaled to meet their needs and that we don't just have very, very large food system infrastructure like processing facilities and aggregation points that are only really scaled for very large farms and food businesses.
The seeds of the program began in 2021 when the Washington legislature distributed federal COVID-19 recovery funds to support local food infrastructure because of the pandemic's impact on supply chains. Since 2023, the Local Food System Infrastructure Grant Program has distributed $8 million in state funds. Van Horn says the program is popular and received nearly $19 million in requests, well over what it could provide. One project that was selected, however, was the nonprofit Columbia Community Creamery, which received more than $450,000.
They got a large grant to get the equipment necessary to receive bulk milk deliveries and then process that into jars and have it ready to be consumed. A lot of food safety involved there.
The Washington State Department of Agriculture expects to start the next application round in the summer or fall of next year. Van Horn says the agency looks for proposals that impact the regional food system, are achievable, and ask for a reasonable amount of money. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
In national news, Senate Democrats aim to hold Trump accountable for election subversion if the Supreme Court won't. A first progressive squad member sticks with Biden, and former presidential candidate Nikki Haley offers Trump her delegates. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We're doing this because we believe that in America, no president should be free to overturn an election against the will of the people, no matter what the conservative justices may believe.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says Democrats will introduce a bill to classify former President Donald Trump's efforts to subvert the 2020 election as unofficial acts. The move would strip Trump of criminal immunity the Supreme Court just granted to presidents. The White House says it's also considering how to respond to the court's unprecedented ruling. Meanwhile, Rhode Island Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse is asking the Justice Department to appoint a special counsel to investigate Justice Clarence Thomas. Whitehouse says Thomas may have violated federal tax or ethics laws when he accepted luxury gifts from Republican megadonors.
If a justice isn't reporting income on his legally required financial disclosure, There's a good chance that something is amiss with his tax reporting as well.
He also wants the DOJ to investigate a $300,000 loan to Thomas that was forgiven. President Joe Biden is standing firm against calls for him to drop out of the race. In a letter to congressional Democrats, Biden says the intra-party drama since his debate against Trump must end. New York representative and influential progressive Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez agrees.
Joe Biden is our nominee. He is not leaving this race. He is in this race, and I support him.
She says it's important that Democrats turn their focus back to Trump and his agenda. House Democrats met Tuesday with several members having publicly called for Biden to step aside. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus met with Biden and say they support him. The Republican National Committee may have softened its platform language on abortion and same-sex marriage to appease Trump, but the party is sticking with a hardline stance on voting. The GOP's new platform calls for strict voter ID laws, a return to paper ballots, and requiring proof of citizenship to cast a ballot. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee denies that's aimed at voter suppression.
We have really well-run elections, and we want to continue to have really well-run elections.
Meanwhile, former GOP presidential candidate Nikki Haley says she's releasing her 100 delegates and encouraging them to support Trump at next week's Milwaukee convention.
Trump would be smart to reach out to the millions of people who voted for me and continue to support me, and not assume that they're just going to be with him.
A federal judge has ruled protesters can't march through a security zone at the Republican convention. A coalition of organizations had sued the city of Milwaukee, alleging the arranged parade routes violated free speech. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on new urban heat island mapping, showing how the built environment of cities like Portland impact how hot residents experience the temperature to be. Then we'll speak with Street Roots digital producer Kenani Cortez about her latest story on the first ever Pride celebration held at an Oregon prison. At 6, it's Wings. Then at 7, Exploration with Michio Kaku. Tonight's weather is clear skies with a low of 72. Tomorrow's weather is sunny with a high of 86. Today in history, the United States women's soccer team defeated China in a penalty shootout to win the final match of the 1999 FIBA Women's World Cup. The game was watched by over 90,000 people, setting a new world record for attendance at a women's sporting event. The quote of the day is from Shel Silverstein, who is an American writer, poet, cartoonist, and musician. He is best known for his children's book, including The Giving Tree, A Light in the Attic, and Falling Up. He said, quote, "Just because something ain't been done don't mean it can't be did," end quote.
Preschoolers on the Nebraska-Winnebago Reservation take part in what educators call Head Start on steroids. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nearly 60% of Nebraska 3- and 4-year-olds are not enrolled in preschool programs. But for at least a decade, most preschoolers on the Winnebago Reservation have been part of the National Educare Learning Network. According to educators, preschool is associated with increased success in school and beyond. Deborah Van Fleet reports.
Amy LaPointe-Houghton, education director with the Winnebago Tribe, says the Educare program was once described to her as Head Start on steroids. She says in their years with the Educare system, Winnebago children have gone from testing near the bottom to being right in line with children in the 24 other Educare centers across the country.
So we've made that huge leap, and it's all around the data. We have our data compiled in a book every year, and things that are identified in that book, that's something we make improvements on.
She says evaluators from the University of Nebraska Medical Center assess the children at the beginning and end of each school year. Educare Winnebago is the only Educare program in the country on an Indian reservation. LaPointe-Houghton attributes their success to Educare's four pillars: data utilization, professional development, high-quality teaching, and intensive family engagement. She says one focus of their program is a social-emotional curriculum, teaching skills like identifying and expressing emotions in acceptable ways.
To be able to better handle situations when they're encountering some kind of traumatic event or a stressful event, that they have some tools to be able to help themselves.
LaPointe Houghton adds research about the negative impact of stress and trauma on physical health makes them hopeful that if their children learn how to manage stress, they'll have better overall health as well as more success in school.
We have high numbers of diabetes, blood pressure, heart disease, and it makes me think it could be contributed because of all the traumatic things that happen in people's lives, and you don't even realize that it's doing damage to your body.
To enroll in Educare Winnebago, children must live in Winnebago but don't have to be tribal members. The program has eligibility requirements to ensure they're serving the children with the highest needs. I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
In South Dakota, the Rapid Area School Superintendent has been placed on a 30-day leave following comments made during a Department of Education investigation. The decade-long investigation orbited the district's treatment of Indigenous students. Superintendent Nicole Swaggart was quoted saying students operating on, quote, Indian time is a challenge for the district. Members of the Native community spoke out about the comments at a school board meeting, saying the comments are unacceptable and called for the school board to reassess the role of superintendent. Members of the Native community also say the comments reaffirm claims of racism leveled at the district. The district issued a formal apology, and Swaggart has been required to take cultural competency training. However, the district is maintaining its confidence in her ability to lead the district following the leave. The Indian Health Service announced this week awards of more than $24 million and grants to 23 tribes, tribal organizations, and urban Indian organizations to help improve access to public health services over the next 3 years. The grant program has two initiatives: to expand public health services by supporting tribes and organizations and implementing core public health functions and improve management capabilities. The other is designed to help tribes and organizations establish goals and performance measures. IHS Director Rosalind So says the grants will support goals of ensuring comprehensive, culturally appropriate health services for American Indian and Alaska Native communities. The IHS serves about 2.8 million American Indians and Alaska Natives in 37 states. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Seems like you can get almost anything in a vending machine, and in three states, you can get bullets that way. The Dallas, Texas-based American Rounds has installed their machines in a handful of grocery stores in Texas, Oklahoma, and Alabama. The machines, which offer handgun, rifle, and shotgun bullets, claim to use artificial intelligence to verify the age of buyers, who must be 21. There are few federal regulations on the sale of ammunition, and only a small number of states have their own tougher laws. There were stricter federal laws in place on ammunition sales until 1986, when Congress passed legislation backed by the National Rifle Association. The company already has more than 200 installation requests from stores in nine states. There were more than 500 shootings in the U.S. over the 4th of July weekend, including at least 180 people shot and killed, according to the Gun Violence Archive.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden and Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse have asked the Department of Justice to appoint a special counsel to investigate whether Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas broke federal tax and ethics laws. In a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland, the senators wrote, quote, "We do not make this request lightly. The evidence assembled thus far plainly suggests that Justice Thomas has committed numerous willful violations of federal ethics and false statement laws," end quote. The request intensified efforts by Senate Democrats to examine Justice Thomas's conduct as they are trying to force Supreme Court justices to comply with stricter ethics and financial disclosure rules. 2 days before the letter was written, Thomas, in his ruling on the Trump immunity case, questioned whether the DOJ has the power to even appoint a special counsel.
A U.S. Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity from prosecution is raising concerns about the power of the executive branch and the future of democracy. In one of its final decisions of the term, the majority of justices ruled in Trump versus United States that presidents are immune from criminal prosecution when performing official acts. Head of United Vision for Idaho, Adrian Evans, says this means the president can break the law and not worry about being investigated.
Do we trust whomever is elected next not to use that power? Because right now, everything hinges not that the power has been granted, but will there be a president that we have who will not use that power to their favor?
In her dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote that the ruling makes the president a king above the law. Evans notes the issue has been compounded by the politicization of the courts. She says the courts have been weaponized to serve the party in power.
We have always lived in a system where we had relatively stable systems of checks and balances. What this latest decision by the Supreme Court did was it put all of the power in the hands of the executive, and in subsequent rulings also undermined the administration of the state.
Evans says Congress could take steps to rein in the Supreme Court by instituting term limits, creating an enforceable code of ethics, and expanding the number of justices on the court. But she says Congress will have to act soon to prevent a worst-case scenario in which democracy erodes completely.
It's going to take the will of the people demanding that their congressional representatives vote for those measures, that we take this moment as a dire warning that we have to reset course if we still believe that democracy is our best path forward.
That was Adrian Evans from United Vision for Idaho.
Israeli forces killed dozens of people on Tuesday in an airstrike on a school turned refugee camp. That's the fourth school the Israeli military has bombed in as many days. At least 29 people were killed, and dozens more were wounded, including women and children, which have made up to two-thirds of those killed in Israel's latest attack on Gaza. Many of those who were injured were in critical condition and were taken to the under-resourced Nasser Hospital, which was itself raided by Israeli soldiers in mid-February. The Israeli Defense Forces, or IDF, acknowledged carrying out the airstrike, but claimed they were aiming for a Hamas militant, quote-unquote, adjacent to the complex. The BBC reported that the area was full of displaced Gazans at the time of the airstrike, resulting in widespread destruction and the deaths of women and children. The majority of Gaza's schools and universities have been damaged or completely destroyed by the IDF, with the ones still standing being used to shelter those displaced by the war. The United Nations estimates that 90% of Gaza's population has been internally displaced since last October. Philippe Lazzarini is the Commissioner General of the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. He said that, quote, schools have gone from safe places of education and hope for children to overcrowded shelters and often ending up a place of death and misery. The blatant disregard of international humanitarian law cannot become the new normal. Ceasefire now before we lose what is left of our common humanity, end quote.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael found a silver lining in the heat dome.
One good thing about nasty weather is it distracts us from nasty politics. We talk about weather, living in the present, not thinking about elections, though the New York Times, Fox News, etc. make their own weather. Like the journalistic blurricane of media saying Biden must go with no clear idea of the consequences. Trump's nastiness, dishonesty, and psychopathy aren't news, so aren't reported, when media should continue giving us all the relevant information. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court decided that a rogue prosecutor is more dangerous than a rogue president, when the biggest danger to democracy is a rogue Supreme Court ignoring their responsibility to interpret laws, not make them. The Constitution assigns that job elsewhere. Our responsibility is to participate in democracy, which is a lot more than voting and as easy as knowing and talking with your neighbors, coworkers, and friends. As Ginsburg wrote, businessmen are serious, movie producers are serious, everybody's serious but me. These serious times require joyful commitment. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 10th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Grant Button, and Bree Johnson. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegethoff, Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, and Edwin J. Vieira.
The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our lovely members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. It's hot out. You know it. I know it. As much as it's been recognized that the human-caused climate crisis is contributing to higher temperatures and heat waves, our built environment can do the same, especially in cities. It's called the urban heat island effect, which basically means that cities experience much warmer temperatures than nearby rural areas do. But just how much of an impact does this effect have, and how is it connected to the environment in different neighborhoods? Climate Central looked at this question in new research released on July 10th. Across the country, they looked at 65 major cities and estimated how much hotter it gets than baseline in different neighborhoods because of what residents have built there. Of the 50 million people included in the analysis, 68% lived in an area with an urban heat island index of 8 degrees or more. So when the forecast says it's going to be 80 degrees, people experience a temperature of 88 degrees in those neighborhoods. In Portland specifically, 60,000 people live in parts of the city that have